Hello, I'm Mark Stein, and welcome. Good to have you with us today. Before we jump into our program, remind you that support for WEAA is provided by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information at AAA.com/discounts. Before we jump into our conversation about student loans and the crisis of student loans in America, I want to give you this day in history, as you do every day here on the Mark Steiner Show. This was a day in 1932 that a politician that some of you love to love and some of you love to hate was born, Donald Rumsfeld. The 13th person to be the United States Secretary of Defense. And Oliver Sacks, one of the world's great neurologists and authors, turns 80 years old today. And he wrote an interesting piece about turning 80 years old, about how much he's looking forward to the 80s and what they bring in terms of the role he can play as an elder in our society. I've had the pleasure of interviewing him several times. He's an amazing human being. You can go to steinershow.org and see our old interviews with Oliver Sacks. This is also the birthday of Mercedes Sosa, born in 1935, activist. And this is also the birthday, and we played her poems on the anniversary of her death. But June Jordan, a great American poet, writer, and educator, was born on this day in 1936. And events that happened today in history, it is interesting. George Washington this is the first time he read the Declaration of Independence to his troops on this day. But this was also the day slavery was a battle people fought against for years, hundreds of years in the Western Hemisphere. And in 1793, the Act Against Slavery was passed in Upper Canada, and the importations of slaves into Lower Canada was prohibited. Canada being ahead of the game, the United States, when it came to slavery, which is why it became one of the focal points of the Underground Railroad. This is also the day, oddly enough, given what we're fighting for in America now, in 2013, in 1868, this is when the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was ratified, guaranteeing African Americans full citizenship and all persons, all male persons, the right to vote and due process of law. And that battle seems to continue to this day. And finally, let's look at this is the day when Francis Cardoza was made Secretary of State in South Carolina, becoming the first African-American cabinet officer at that state level in this country during the beginning and the height of Reconstruction in America. And, of course, this is a family that was an African-American family that was linked to a Jewish-American family, the Cardozas, one of whom sat in the Supreme Court. We've had shows about that in the past as well. So that's this day in history. And we will now jump into our conversation with our guests about student loans. We have with us Dr. Ivory Tolson, who is Associate Professor at Howard University School of Education, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Negro Education, and a Contributing Education Editor at TheRoot.com. Ivory, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. Good to be back.
Matthew Chingos is with us. Chingos or Chingus?
Chingos.
Chingos, sorry. Matthew Chingos is with us, fellow at the Brookings Institute, Institution's Brown Center on Education Policy. Good to have you with us as well, Matthew.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education here at Morgan State University. Good to have you back in the studio again, Ronnie.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. And Stephen Stromberg, columnist for the Washington Post and around the country, is with us as well. Stephen, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. 410-319-8888. There's probably not a person listening to this broadcast right now who's not affected by student loans on one level or another, whether you are a parent signing the checks for the loans you took out, or whether you are a student, former student, now having to deal with paying these loans back. We're going to talk about why it is that America seems at such an impasse over student loans and why these student loans have grown to such massive amounts in the United States now, and what can be done about it, and why it seems Congress seems to be in a complete deadlock over what to do. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages, which I'll check in just a minute, or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So let's take a look. I mean, Ivory Tolson, being in the university a long time, things have changed a lot in terms of tuition rates, the burden of debt, and you also play a role in counseling students a great deal at your university. Talk about your analysis of where we are and why we are where we are, if that's not too confusing a statement.
Yeah, well, for quite some time, I've been saying that the student loan debt is going to be just like the mortgage crisis, and I think we're seeing a tipping point right now. But there's a lot of forces that come together everything from corporate greed to universities trying to compete against each other to the students not making the best types of decisions or the most informed decisions about the money that they're getting and their selections of universities. And also a lot of gridlock installing in Congress. And a lot of these things are coming together, and it's not going to be a pretty picture in the end. So something needs to happen. I think it has to start with educating students about alternatives to student loans and really giving them a realistic perspective of how to select a college and what that really means. A lot of times they're looking at the glitter in colleges when you know, if you make a 4.0 at Cal State Long Beach, that's better than getting a 2.2 at Stanford, you know, in the long run. When you think about post-baccalaureate options, you know, so you know, there's a lot of different things that we have to consider here.
It seems, Robert, talk why you think we are where we are. You had some interesting pieces in the Post, and why are Congress in such gridlock and what that means?
Yeah.
Well, actually, the battle of the moment, of course, is on this doubling of this one student loan rate. That's the big news right now. And part of why that happened is that Congress set these loan rates in stone. It just decides it's going to be 3.4, it's going to be 6.8, it's going to be whatever, and then it becomes a political football. So in 2006, it was a Democratic talking point that they were going to have the student loan rate, but they could only do it temporarily because it was expensive. When that came up, there was a big battle, you might recall, last year about whether or not to extend it or what to do about it.
Right.
They extended it for a year. And now Congress is back at it again, except this time they didn't do anything before the rate expired. But there is a little bit of hope, possibly, because President Obama and the Republican House actually generally agree on a something like a compromise and long-term policy. And right now the action is in the Senate, where things don't look quite as optimistic as all that. But it's still possible we could get a result where we settle this issue. And then I think really get to looking at some of the much bigger and deeper issues in college finance that really kind of have been swept under the rug while we're yelling about the loan rate.
And Matthew, let me get your take and then come to Dr. Ronnie Ellington. Then we'll kind of move
sure.
on to some specifics. Go ahead.
Sure, yeah, I agree with a lot of those points that have been made. I mean, the problem here is really having Congress, you know, meddling with this rate every year. So, you know, I support this compromise position among the president, some Democrats, and a lot of Republicans to tie the student loan interest rate to a market rate so you don't have this political fight year after year.
Oh, Ronnie
Ellington.
I have a couple of interesting perspectives on this. One, I think I agree with Dr. Tolson around really what it means to educate people about making college decisions, because just like mortgage is, you know, where you buy, how you buy, what your intentions are, needs to be factored into the kind of debt you get into as a student. But then as a coordinator of a program where my job is to recruit people getting master's and doctoral degrees, the question I keep asking myself is it a good return on investment? So as I'm recruiting people and you have student loans, people have to take out loans and these kinds of things, what's the return on the investment? Will they be marketable? Will that mean they get jobs? Because this, coupled with the fact that we are still in a recession, at least some people would say, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So then you have these people taking out all this debt, and then I work in education, so you know, you may or may not make enough money just to pay back certain loans. So does it become a viable investment for people to do, particularly when you start getting advanced degrees and things like that? So for me, as a recruiter, as a person who's saying, come, you know, get a doctorate degree, I'm like, why? You know, and then you're paying back all these loans. But then also, how do you make decisions about going to school? Will that make community colleges more viable because people have to pay back you know, less because they can pretty much afford that? What does it mean for elite institutions, institutions in the middle? So I'm more thinking about it more globally. Yes, it's going to be more out of our pocket, but that's the case anyway. You know, we're paying more for food and clothes. So I'm not surprised at the fact that we're here, but I'm just looking at the broader implications for what it means for programs and for how students make choices about schools. So,
now, one of the things I'm reading about these loans, and I think that, folks, please join us here at 410-319-8888 with your own experiences, questions, and ideas about this. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I'm really curious to see how this is affecting you and what is going on in your life. But if you take an average student debt some people have in America, say, of $31,000 over 4 years, and if you take that current repayment interest, 6.8%, let's say, right? that means that you can leave college and you have to pay back $356.75 a month, almost a car note. It was a mortgage note 50 years ago, but now it's a car note.
And that's not even a – it can be – that ain't even a whole car note in some cases.
Right, exactly. And, which means that over 10 years, you'd pay back an extra $11,000 in interest. So
– and that's assuming you can pay for it. That's
assuming you can pay for it.
That you get a job.
And we'll talk a minute about all the growing rate of defaults that are taking place. But if that student loan was at 1.75%, that monthly rate drops to $285 or so a month, and there's only a few thousand dollars in interest that would be applied over 10 years, $3,000, $3,155 to be exact. And so the question is, given what we pay on Treasury notes, why aren't we making student loans at this low rate so people can actually get through college, repay the loan, become a working member of society without being saddled with the debt? And, you know, and we're all, when you couple that with, well, let's stop there because I can make it more complex. But I want to talk what's happening now with banks and also the for-profit colleges, which are really kind of pulling this this debt thing in new directions. But so that seems to be what we aren't talking about that a lot in Congress and in other places. But you start with Stephen and go to Ivory and then around the room.
Sure, no problem. A couple of points. Number one is there's sort of a wonky, pesky sort of way that the Congressional Budget Office looks and calculates out the cost of these programs. And it's among economists, it's widely viewed as understating the cost of these loan programs. And so if you drop the rate even further, the argument is that, in fact, it would actually be much more expensive than you think. That's number one. Number two is, it's 6.8% or 1.7% or wherever you sort of put it in this, put the rate in this sort of range. Students are going to be getting a great deal in terms of, they couldn't get anything like that on the private market. So they're getting a subsidy one way or the other. And number three is I would actually, again, take away all this focus on the rate of interest going in. I agree that students shouldn't, after they graduate, shouldn't have to be saddled with debt that is totally unaffordable. And so the question is how to do that. And I think the way to do that is to say, again, take a page from Obama's book and say, we're going to be really generous with an income-based repayment program. You'll never have to pay more than 10% of your income. After 10 or 20 years, depending on which proposal you're looking at, you won't have to pay anything, depending on your financial circumstance. I think that's the way, really, to get at the college cost question in a way that doesn't, give a lot of subsidy to a lot of people who might not end up needing it after they graduate.
So it raises some issues here, though, Ira Tolson, and then we'll go to Matthew Chingos and back to Ronnie. I mean, the student loans that you take out, like Stafford loans, that are the government-guaranteed loans, you're limited in the amount of money you can borrow. And they usually do not cover the rising cost of college tuition.
Right.
so that you have to take out additional loans.
Yes.
To get through. Yes. I'm not sure what the tuition rate is at Howard University. but you can tell us. I have no idea. I really don't know. I should have looked it up before you came on. You know, but if you're in a state school at University of Maryland, or here at Morgan State University, at Maryland you're going to pay $25,000 a year.
Right. Yeah. And that's about how much you'll pay at Howard. And there are market forces at play here, and we have to consider them. Yes, we want the interest rates low, but we also saw with the mortgage crisis, when interest rates are low, you incentivize people to take out more loans, and you also give the companies, in this case the universities, this way of saying, okay, well, maybe we can increase our tuition because the rates are lower. And so all of these things are going on. So when you just lower interest rates without looking at some of the market forces, then students still end up paying more. And so that's one of the things that we have to consider.
Paying more because tuitions are too high. Because our tuitions are very high,
Tuitions go up. You know, so at first when we drop the interest rates on mortgages, people start jumping in the market. And so the price of the house starts to go up. That's the same thing that's happening at the university.
I think we just lost Ivory Tolson. We'll get him back as soon as we can. And you want to jump in, Matthew, then Ronnie?
Sure. I mean, I think we need to think carefully about how we want to deliver subsidies to students. I think it is important for the government to be subsidizing students who want to go to college, particularly those who don't have the resources and their family don't have the resources to pay for it themselves. But I think the best way to provide those subsidies is through upfront grants that directly reduce the price of college, such as through the Pell Grant program. I think if the government's going to spend a given amount of money, you know, helping students go to college, it's better to put those into an upfront subsidy that reduces the cost students see that they're going to have to pay when they're deciding whether to go to college and where to go to college, rather than burying that subsidy in a below market interest rate that's not going to affect them until, you know, many years down the road after they graduate, and hopefully at a point when, you know, on average, most of them are going to, you know, have the resources to pay it back. So I think it's better to deliver a subsidy to kids from low-income families when they're in the low-income family rather than after they've finished college and hopefully are on a path to the middle class.
Ronnie, you have a critical look. Nobody can see you but me.
I know, because this, you know, as a mathematician, I tell people, you know, when I make decisions about buying houses and going to school, I not only think about where, but how much. So to me, I think educating students on, and I think Dr. Tolson mentioned it briefly, that I say, I want to go to Stanford and they're giving you $5 to go and then you have to take out $45,000. You know what I mean? It's like, I think we need to start thinking about the return on investment. So education is an investment, and I think I don't think students are always aware of the return on that. So I get the conversations around, you know, you're going to be broke on the back end or the front end and the loans versus the grants. But I think decision-making, if you have a 6% interest rate, like, I didn't understand how people got caught up in the crisis around balloon rates, because as a mathematician, I'm like, that makes no sense. You're going to lose your house. Like, I knew that, you know. So certain decisions I won't make because I'm like, is this a good return on investment? Will I have to do a balloon payment or pay $350 when I come out if I go to, say, community college in Baltimore for 2 years and then go to 4 year versus going to 4 years out in California where I'm getting a state education? You see what I'm saying? I think, because at the end of the day, I don't think we can, this Congress is going to do what it's going to do. And, you know, they're motivated by things that may not be in the best interest of the people. And that's just my opinion. So as the people, we have to start thinking about what decisions we're going to do. So I'm not going to buy a house I can't afford. I'm not going to go somewhere I can't afford to get an undergraduate degree that is such, you know what I mean? Why would I do that? So I think my perspective is a little different about educating people on what the implications are. Even if the rates are low now, they can still increase. See, I always know when I'm a student, it can increase. So what would that mean for your bottom line? So I think we need to start having those kinds of conversations in light of this, and still encouraging Congress to say, okay, having these lower rates can make a difference, but also educating people about, you owe $35,000, whether it's a 1% interest or 6%, you still are now taking out $35,000 to go to a private school that is for 2 years. Because I've seen people do that at certain schools I've worked at that were private. They were paying $60,000 for a 2-year degree at like an art school. Like, that's not a wise decision.
Well, I mean, you know what I'm saying? One of the problems we have here is there are a bunch of problems, it seems to me. I mean, one is this kind of huge debt we're seeing mm-hmm. that students are taking on. They're not going to be able to pay back. Many will not be able to pay back. Some will. But what it will do to strap those who do pay it all the way through because its incomes are not rising the same as they used to.
And some fields just don't have the incomes to do it, depending on your field of study. You know, if you look at the salaries in certain fields, yeah. So.
And then you've seen, if you look at the graph, you see how tuition rates have gone up and that the loans cannot keep up with them, so private loans kick in. And now private loans are being bundled and sold the same way mortgages are being sold, which some people are arguing is one of the next crises we're going to face when our next financial crisis can be built around these student loans, because more and more people are taking out private loans because they can't afford the tuition and the money they get from the other loans. So that means people of means can write a check for tuition to go to Stanford, Yale, or Harvard, but everybody else is going to be strapped. So we're in a very seems to me that we are, and I'm going to seems to me we are in a really dangerous situation in this country when it comes to this, about what it could do for the economy and people's personal lives in the next 20 years. And does Congress have the capability of even thinking that through and making decisions that are best for the American people, not necessarily best for those who are running these universities and making these loans. Matthew, a quick thought before we go. No, we can take a quick break, and I'm going to pick right up on that point. So try to remember what I just said. I'll try to remember as well, and we'll come right back to that. Don't go away.
Sounds great.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're concluding our discussion around student loans here with Dr. Ivory Tolson, Associate Professor of Howard University School of Education, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Negro Education, Contributing Education Editor at TheRoot.com, Matthew Chingos, who is Fellow in the Brookings Institution's Brown Center on Educational Policy, Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education here at Morgan State University, where we are broadcasting from. And Stephen Stromberg, columnist for The Washington Post. So I don't know who – so let jump into what I was saying in a broad sense was I think we're facing a crisis. And are we able to address the kind of multifaceted, tentacled issues that we face from rising tuitions, what that is, and the what people have to do in order to get through college in terms of borrowing money, I mean, and the bundling, where that will take us. I mean, all things seem to be a perfect storm, Matthew Chingos, for a disaster in the next 20 years or less.
I'd like to follow up by emphasizing a critically important point that Ronnie made before the break, and that's the critically important role of information when students make decisions about where to go to college, and it's information on both the cost and benefit side. So a student from a low-income family who could go to, say, Stanford or a community college, Stanford's actually going to be cheaper for that student because of the generous financial aid that a place like Stanford can provide. But not everyone knows that. So that piece of information is really important. And then on the benefit side, as Ronnie said, it's about knowing what are going to be the economic returns to that degree in terms of the student's ability to pay back the debt. And unfortunately, at most institutions, we don't have good information on the outcomes for those graduates. We know the graduation rate in for some students at most places. And in some places, that's only 10 or 20%, which is, really, really troubling. But even if we know that, we don't know the employment rates. We don't know the earnings. So a student that's trying to make a decision about where to go to college is going to have a really tough time. So there's a bill in Congress right now called the Know Before You Go Act. It's a bipartisan bill sponsored by Senators Rubio and Wyden that would do something to address that. So I think information is important, but there's not enough information out there for students to be able to make meaningful choices. And as a result, colleges aren't competing on the right things. They're not competing on quality and on price. Instead, a lot of times they're competing on what Ivory Tolson called the glitter, things that can tend to drive up price and lead students to take on more debt.
Mm-hmm. Ivory, go ahead.
I think the federal government can do a lot to resolve the issue, and they need to think beyond just the interest rates. One thing they could do is they could tie federal funding to colleges who have programs in place to support more students and to drive down tuitions. A lot of the federal monies are going to the colleges that have the largest tuitions. And so one of the things the federal government can do is look at that and see how can we incentivize colleges for providing more scholarships and more ways for students to leave with no debt.
That's an interesting point. Let me, Stephen, you want to jump in, or then I'll go to the phones, get a couple calls in here.
Yeah, I agree with a whole lot that's been said. I think students need to try to be savvy consumers. I think that one of the big issues that that really isn't talked about enough in Washington, D.C., is how to incentivize these colleges to get their tuitions down. There is a lot of taxpayer money going into this enterprise we call higher education, and we really haven't sort of figured out how to rein in college costs in a meaningful way. It's something that we need to pay more attention to.
Let me go to the phones here. 410-319-8888. James, welcome. You're on the air. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to comment on the fact that these young people who are on their way to college, they don't understand so much about what it takes to manage their expenses, manage the cost of going to college. These young people are going from 11th and 12th grade, just learning how to manage their budget. They don't understand that often after the first year, they'll be completely responsible for managing their accounts because, you know, you have to sign the FERPA agreement. Because of the FERPA agreement, the parents don't know if the students are passing or failing. You talked about Stanford and other schools, but at the same time, if someone does get into one of those schools, despite all of the wonderful help that might come from financial aid departments, if the student's grades fall below a certain level, they start to fall out of certain categories for financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
And then students often, because of emergencies in the family, because of if a young lady has a child or young man has to take responsibility for raising a child that he has to stop out, and they stop making payments, or they stop out and they're no longer in school, considered a certain level of certain number of hours as full-time, certain number of hours as part-time, and they have to stop out. Those things begin to affect their ability to stay in school, and it's in a complicated system, and every school is so different.
James, you're making some critical points. Ron, you were kind of addressing some of that in the beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where I think we should be headed. And I'm not the queen of personal responsibility, because I think sometimes we use that as a way to let the social structures off the hook. Well, if you're just personally responsible, then you'll be okay. So I do think that there is a balance between educating the consumer who's actually taking on this debt and Congress creating an infrastructure where it could work for your average, you know, Joe Q taxpayer. So I think we need to balance both. I think, you know, why do we have to have a 7% interest rate? Mortgage rates are still in the 3s and 4s. Why now are we having student loan debt now be raised to 6.8? So that becomes a question, because I'm about to refinance at like a 4% rate. I think it went up a little bit. So I just to me, I'm just questioning why can't it just be comparable with mortgage rates at this point? Why are we even having this discussion? And that's something that I would just be curious to understand from a political standpoint. Is it just a political football, or are there some other things behind the scenes that's driving this? Just something to be aware. But as consumers, at the end of the day, you need to make decisions about where you're going, what it costs to pay back. Because if you owe $35,000, you owe $35,000. If it's 1.5%, yes, you're going to pay less interest. If it's 6.8%, you're going to pay more, but you're still going to owe $35,000. Like, and then think about that. Are you willing to take that on, or is there another way to get a similar or a parallel education and you owe 12? You see, I mean, that becomes an issue.
Which is, well, let me raise an issue that one of our listeners wrote in about. But first, we have a listener, Marion, who from Randallstown, who wants to talk about a personal experience she's had with this college loans with her daughter. Marion, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to share with you some of the observations I made. My daughter is going to be graduating from UMBC in December. She would have been graduating in June, but they have a lot of requirements that they tack on at the end of whatever the student is doing, and if the student hasn't done this, things that really don't have anything to do with their major. For example, there's no reason why a college student has to be required to take phys ed like they were in the ninth grade. And that was one of the requirements. The other difficulty that we found was when we went to purchase the textbooks are alarmingly expensive. I remember one semester she needed a math textbook, and that was
$300.
Hang on to your handbag, $300.
I know. I teach math.
And
I know.
Guess what? It was required. And so these are all things that put the student in a dilemma, even if they have a relatively good aid and scholarship package, which my daughter did. It was extraordinarily expensive. And I'm going to tell you something else. A lot of these schools treat these students like they're walking, talking ATM machines, and all the fees and this and that and the other that kind of just pop up, and you just get a bill for this, that, and the other. And then when you call them, they go, oh, well, you only have to pay it once. And I'm like, you got your tuition. Why do we have to pay it? You know what I mean?
Right.
Put it in the bill. It's like they give you a bill for what the tuition is, and you pay it. And then all of a sudden, this fee pops up, and that fee pops up, and there's a textbook that costs $300, and there's an extra class they have to take. And it's like they gnaw at you and gnaw at you and gnaw at you. And the closer your kid gets to graduation, they're going to get that sheepskin. Of course, you want to pay it because you want to go and sit and watch them walk across the stage and get that piece of paper. And so I really think that the schools are culpable in putting these students in that position. But one of your other panelists had talked about the graduation rates for some of these schools. When you go online and apply for aid, the school that you are going to is on the FAFSA, that online application, and it will tell you what the graduation rate is of that school. And if you decide it's too low, you don't have to enter that school code. And I always advise people, if you see a graduation rate below 50%, maybe you ought to consider another institution. They're obviously having problems.
Marion, I appreciate the call. I mean, we're about running out of time, but I wanted you to get all your thoughts out there. I think this is and I want to kind of round this up because we have to close this out and come back to this another day. But and I think that part of that also is when people drop out of college, when you have a low graduation rate, when you have a – well, there's two reasons, I think, in some ways. One of these private colleges where people can't afford it, so they just drop out. The other part of places, even like Morgan State University and other state institutions where many of the students are working class and poor working class kids, they drop out because they can't afford to keep going. They have to get a job and then come back, which is why it takes sometimes 6 and 8 years for a student, let's say at Morgan or other places, to graduate. I mean, that's probably what kids are facing, I think, in schools like this. And one of our listeners wrote in, Brenda, just to close out, saying community colleges, then transfer. Most people I know with college-age kids are not doing four-year colleges thing anymore. They can't afford it. They go to community colleges first, and then they transfer because the tuitions are so low. You can actually write a check for a kid to go to a community college. So those are all the issues we're facing. We do have to round this out because we have our other guest standing by for our next segment from Egypt that we have to get to. But are there very quick closing thoughts? Ivory, Matthew, Ronnie, and Stephen. I do want to appreciate go ahead.
I would just add that I think we've kind of all come to this consensus that the student loan interest problem, I mean, the loans are really a symptom of a broader problem. And the broader problem is the college cost problem.
Yeah.
So that's the problem we need to address. So we need to solve the student rate interest thing and, you know, put that to one side and address the real problem that's causing this symptom.
I want to thank all of you for being with us. This has been great. Matthew Chingas, Steve Stromberg, Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Dr. Ivory Tolson. It's been a great conversation. Look forward to having you all back. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a 30-second break or less, and we're going to jump into our conversation about what's happening in Egypt right now with Shahira Amin, who's in Cairo, and Umar Farouk. Stay with us. We'll be right back.